From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program, connecting you to the Capitol every week from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. And on today's show, we're asking the simple question, does truth matter? Is truth relevant? Because there's been a lot in the news recently regarding this question as it pertains to gender and basic human anatomy, from college campuses to women's shelters and bathrooms and locker rooms. The debate rages on over gender policy. And as both political parties grow further and further apart, that includes this issue. And at some point, we're going to have a serious conversation, because as both sides have drifted further apart on this issue of whether or not your gender should match your biological sex or not, and whether or not we should make changes regarding gender policy, this is going to continue being an issue. There are a number of concerning stories starting today with the news that a Christian student who holds a leadership position as a student senator at the University of California, Berkeley, is being ousted from her position after abstaining from a resolution condemning the Trump administration for considering, quote unquote, narrowing the definition of gender to match biological reality. And I'll say that again. She's being ousted from her position for abstaining from a vote, not for voting no, not for introducing her own resolution supporting the Trump administration, but for simply abstaining from a vote on a resolution condemning the Trump administration for holding a science-based view of gender and therefore gender policy. And this is a profile in courage for this young student, Isabella Chow, because standing up for Christian or religious values is getting pretty tough at any college, but at one of the most liberal campuses in the country, that takes a lot of nerve. But thankfully, she isn't backing down. This all started on Halloween when this resolution was introduced by another student senator, and Isabella gave a statement, a very thoughtful, compassionate statement, very well crafted, explaining why she couldn't vote on the resolution because of her Christian beliefs in choosing to abstain. Again, not even voting no, just abstaining. And what she said was, "In God's eyes and therefore my own, every one of you here today in the LGBTQ plus community as a whole is significant, valid, wanted, and loved, even if and when our views differ. That said, I cannot vote for this bill without compromising my values and my responsibility to the community that elected me to represent them. As a Christian, I personally do believe that certain acts and lifestyles conflict with what is good, right, and true. I believe that God created male and female at the beginning of time and designed sex for marriage between one man and one woman. For me, to love another person does not mean that I silently concur when at the bottom of my heart I do not believe that your choices are right or the best for you as an individual. After lengthy conversations with many of my community leaders and advisors, I have chosen to abstain from voting on the resolution tonight." And in response to that statement, this young student was kicked out of the party that she belonged to on campus. She has been labeled a bigot. And at their student senate meeting last week, hundreds of students, hundreds, protested and even had a large banner that said, "Senator Chow, resign now." How is that for the free exchange of ideas on a college campus? And this student, Isabella Chow, she said in a statement to the Daily Signal, "I expected there to be opposition, I expected there to be disagreement, but I didn't expect that a place that claimed to be so inclusive and tolerant would turn its back on me so quickly. Now over 1,000 people have signed a petition demanding that she resign from student government or face a recall." And she even again very gracefully attempted to defend herself by sending an op-ed to the school's newspaper, which was rejected by the student paper. which led her to then attempt to edit her piece to comply with the standards of the paper that she allegedly failed to meet, but was still rejected because the submission as a whole did not meet the newspaper's, quote, editorial standards. This is what college students today are facing at university campuses. So much for tolerance, love, and acceptance. So long as you think, believe, and vote exactly the way that we think you ought to. Biology isn't bigotry, and not every disagreement is centered in hate. And I think most people recognize this, but it's getting harder for people to stand up and defend themselves because they don't want to face the public backlash and mob mentality that we're seeing in instances like this across the country. But through it all, this student, Isabella, she again has been incredibly courageous and graceful, and hopes that her stand will encourage others to stand up for truth. And I certainly hope that will be the case, because there are real-world consequences to not only adopting but forcing on the entire country the ideology that says you can pick your gender and everyone else has to agree and abide by what you choose to identify with regardless of biological reality. For example, a battered woman's shelter in Alaska is being threatened and facing a lawsuit for violating Anchorage's sexual orientation and gender identity non-discrimination law by having a women's-only shelter and not allowing biological men to sleep and use the same facilities as women who are recovering from domestic violence, sexual abuse, human trafficking. And if they don't comply, if they don't start allowing biological men into their facility designed for very vulnerable women, they could be shut down. Tucker Carlson of Fox News recently spoke with Alliance Defending Freedom legal counsel Kate Anderson, who is defending the women's shelter in Alaska, about this issue and just what is at stake.
Well, a women's shelter in Anchorage, Alaska may have to close its doors because it wants to admit only women who are in fact biologically female. The Hope Center is currently being investigated by the city of Anchorage for allegedly violating the city's transgender non-discrimination law. In response to this, the center has sued. They say the law infringes on religious freedom. Kate Anderson is senior counsel to the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is representing the Hope Center, and she joins us today. Thanks so much for coming on. So are we misstating that? Here you have a women's shelter that says we just want to admit women. What is their argument for why they should be allowed to do that?
Well, the Hope Center's women's shelter exists to serve women and women who have been abused, women who have suffered domestic violence, sex trafficking, some of the most horrible abuse imaginable. And so to protect those women's privacy and their safety and allow them to heal, the Hope Center keeps their center women's only. But Anchorage is trying to force the Hope Center to allow biological men in to sleep next to these women.
So, I mean, I'm a little confused. Where are all the people who make a living defending women, are always telling us they're defenders of women? Have they weighed in? Why is this being left to you?
I don't know, but it's so important. I have spoken to some of the women at the shelter, and they tell me the emotional and physical consequences for them if they run into a biological man where they're sleeping. And this all started because an individual who is male but identifies as female came to the shelter wanting to spend the night. He was intoxicated. He was clearly injured. And so the Hope Center paid for his taxi and sent him to the hospital to get the care that he needed. But because they didn't let him into the shelter, Anchorage is now after the Hope Center.
I'm just confused. Like, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, I mean, her whole life revolves around protecting women. Here you have a shelter for battered women, abused women, that could be shut down by a city. Has she ridden to the rescue and waited on this? Honestly,
I haven't heard anybody weigh in to the rescue here, but unfortunately, because of the laws in Anchorage, the Hope Center hasn't been able to speak out much until very recently about what's going on. But the work that they do is so important, and they work with other shelters in the area to try to care for all of the homeless. But their particular role in this is to provide this safe, secure place for women at night.
Very quick, as honestly as you can tell us, do you think there's a chance they could be shut down over this?
What Anchorage wants to do is to put a biological male in the shelter with these women. And these women are sleeping in a room 3 to 5 feet from each other. And again, these are women who have suffered severe abuse. So that's very problematic and would effectively shut down and take away that safe place that the Hope Center has been able to provide.
When this lunacy started, I made two predictions. One was, this is going to hurt women, and nobody's going to say anything about it. And both have turned out to be true, except for you, Kate, who are saying something. So thank you.
So again, this is a real world consequence playing out in Alaska, of all places, not exactly a hotbed for socially progressive policies. But this is where we're at. And we've talked previously on the show, another example in Delaware, where the public school system was allowing students to not only choose their gender, but also their race and nationality without their parents' consent or even knowledge. And now we have this story of a 69-year-old man asking to be declared 49, claiming that age is fluid just like gender. This story is from the Washington Post. It came out last week about, again, a 69-year-old Dutch prisoner who is petitioning a court asking that his birth certificate be changed to say that he was born in 1969 rather than 1949. A judge heard his case last Monday and promised to render a verdict in the next several weeks. The prisoner sees his request as no different from a petition to change his name or the gender he was assigned at birth. And he said in a statement, "Nowadays in Europe and in the United States, we are a free people. We can make our own decisions if we want to change our name or if we want to change our gender. So I want to change my age. My feeling about my body and about my mind is that I'm about 40 or 45. And the reason that he wants to change his age is not only because he feels younger, but as he would explain, being younger would make his life much better, including dating prospects, saying, quote, "If you're 69 on Tinder, you're outdated. But I don't want to lie. If you lie, you have to remember everything you say." Points for honesty, and everyone wants to be young, but this is the problem when we start basing policy around feelings rather than facts and reality. And of course, we are free people and we can make our own decisions, but when those decisions start to impede and affect the rights of other people, such as the right to privacy or the right to free speech or the free exercise of religion, then you have a problem, and we have to have sensible solutions. Society has rightly structured itself around the innate and unarguable distinctions between males and females. Tearing down these fundamental distinctions is a drastic alteration of society that is bound to have consequences, especially for women and girls. The last story about a 69-year-old Dutch prisoner petitioning a court to change his age so he can have better luck on Tinder and dating profiles is slightly humorous. But again, there are much more serious consequences, such as a 5-year-old girl being sexually assaulted in her school bathroom because of the school's secret transgender policy. The Office for Civil Rights of the U.S. Department of Education has opened an official investigation into a Georgia elementary school for its handling of a sexual assault that allegedly took place in an elementary school bathroom after a district-wide policy was enacted allowing male students to enter the girls' bathroom. According to this 5-year-old student, she had asked her teacher if she could be excused from class to use the restroom. And when she was coming out of the bathroom stall, a male student who had followed her into the bathroom was waiting for her. She was taken to a hospital to be examined, where it was confirmed that she had been sexually assaulted. The girl's mother reported this incident to the school and did not hear anything for several weeks. And when they finally agreed to meet with her, she learned that the boy her daughter says assaulted her identifies as gender fluid and had been allowed to use the girls' bathroom due to the school's policy change that allowed students to use whatever bathroom they felt was correct for them. And that policy, by the way, still remains in place. Thankfully, the Federalist has done a great job of covering this story and wrote an article about it recently, and they reached out to the school district where this took place, and a spokesperson for the school did respond, and the Federalist asked them, if it's important to believe women and girls when they say they have been sexually assaulted, and the school's spokesperson said that that is irrelevant. In a statement, the family's attorney said, "I'm not sure why they're discounting her account of this assault. Other than that, it is contrary to the narrative that they want to push about the transgender restroom policy." This should be an outrage. Every student's privacy and safety matters, and any safety and privacy policy should respect the needs of all children. Schools can't sacrifice the rights of every other child in the district because of one or two students. Schools instead should craft policies that are both respectful of the privacy concerns of all children and sensitive to the diverse needs of individual children. Because no child should ever be forced into an intimate setting like a restroom or a locker room with another child of the opposite sex. Members of both sexes have come to expect, rightfully so, that they will not be exposed to members of the opposite sex in areas where they are undressing or engaging in private matters. And certainly our schools should be a safe learning environment for all children, where they are educated in the essential skills they need to succeed in the world, not transformed by activists or activist groups to turn our schools into a political battleground where they can impose an agenda to create a genderless society. And I'll make very clear that every person should always be treated with the utmost dignity and respect. No one is suggesting otherwise, or that somehow anyone who identifies as the opposite gender from their biological sex is less of a person or should be treated poorly. That is not the case. This is a complex, difficult, and emotional issue. But policies that are going to govern our societies and affect families and communities and individuals should be based on fact and reality and science, not purely emotional feelings. And certainly when it comes to children, the parents should have the control, not the school, not the state, and whatever political ideology is in charge at any given time. And people will continue to debate and disagree about this issue, and that's fine. That's what this country is about, being able to debate and disagree and have civil discourse, but we're losing that aspect of civility. But when you have this conversation with people, it's really fascinating what happens when you start to ask these really simple, basic questions about truth, about gender, about age, because when you do that, if they're coming from the position that you can just choose to be whatever you want to be, regardless of any sort of reality, you start to see the disconnect and sort of the logical breakdown that occurs. For example, at the beginning of the show, we talked about what was happening at the campus of UC Berkeley with a student who was standing up for what she believed based on her Christian beliefs and how she is being bullied and forced out of her student leadership position. So what do you think happens when you go to a college campus and ask college students at a liberal university some of these questions? Well, that is exactly what our friends from our sister organization in Washington did in a video that they produced by the Family Policy Institute of Washington. Their director, Joseph Backholm, a good friend and a great guy, he decided to go to the University of Washington to see if students looking at him face to face would affirm or reject his new chosen identity as a 6 foot, 5 inch Chinese woman. And again, Joseph is a 5'9" white guy, and he starts to ask students about this issue and what they would say if he told them that he was identifying as a 6'5" Chinese woman. And it's pretty surprising, or maybe not really all that surprising, some of the reactions and answers that he gets to the questions that he poses. Take a listen to this.
There's been a lot of talk about identity lately, but how far does it go? And is it possible to be wrong? We went to the University of Washington to find out.
Are you aware of the debate happening in Washington State around the ability to access bathrooms, locker rooms, spas based on gender identity and gender expression?
I think people should be able to have access to the facility.
I think bathrooms could and potentially should be gender neutral because there doesn't need to be a classification for differences.
I think people definitely should have the ability to go into whichever locker room they want. I feel like at least public universities should do their best to accommodate for those who do not have a specific gender identity.
You know, whether you identify as male or female and whether your sex at birth is matching to that, you should be able to utilize the resources.
So if I told you that I was a woman, what would your response be?
Good for you. Okay. Like, yeah.
Nice to meet you.
I'd be like, what? Really?
I don't have a problem with it.
I'd ask you how you came to that conclusion.
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would your response be?
I mean, I might be a little surprised, but I would say, good for you. Like, yeah, be who you are.
I would maybe think you had some Chinese ancestor.
I would ask you how you similarly came to that conclusion and why you came to that conclusion.
I would have a lot of questions, just because on the outside I would assume that you're a white man.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would your response be?
I wouldn't believe that immediately.
I probably wouldn't believe it, but I mean, it wouldn't really bother me that much to go out my way and tell you, no, you're wrong. I'd just be like, oh, okay, he wants to say he's 7 years old.
If you feel seven at heart, then then so be it. Yeah, good for you.
So if I wanted to enroll in a first grade class, do you think I should be allowed to?
Probably not, I guess. I mean, unless you haven't completed first grade up to this point and for some reason need to do that now.
If that's where you feel like mentally you should be, then I feel like there are communities that would accept you for that.
I would say so long as you're not hindering society and you're not causing harm to other people, I feel like that should be a okay thing.
If I told you I'm 6 feet, 5 inches, what would you say?
That I would question.
Why?
Because you're not. No, I don't think you're 6'5".
If you truly believed you're 6'5", I don't think it's harmful. I think it's fine if you believe that. It doesn't matter to me if you think you're taller than you are.
So you'd be willing to tell me I'm wrong?
I wouldn't tell you you're wrong.
No, but I say that I don't think that you are.
I feel like that's not my place as like another human to say someone is wrong or to draw lines or boundaries.
No, I mean, I wouldn't just go like, oh, you're wrong, like, that's wrong to believe in it, because, I mean, again, it doesn't really bother me what you want to think about your height or anything.
So, I can be a Chinese woman.
You... sure.
But I can't be a 6'5" Chinese woman.
Yes.
If you thoroughly debated me or explained why you felt that you were 6'5", I feel like I would be very open to saying that you are 6'5", or Chinese, or a woman.
It shouldn't be hard to tell a 5'9 white guy that he's not a 6'5 Chinese woman. But clearly it is. Why? What does that say about our culture? And what does that say about our ability to answer the questions that actually are difficult?
Simply put, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. And really, all of this leads me to the main point as we wrap up the show today, looking ahead to Thanksgiving this week, which should serve as an important reminder when we look at the story of the pilgrims. And what I mean is a lot of what is surrounding this issue and laws governing sexual orientation and gender identity have to do with forcing people to conform. Forcing belief, forcing speech, and requiring people to violate their conscience or their sincerely held religious beliefs in the name of acceptance and non-discrimination because the government told you you have to, or they will fine you or shut you down or force you out. And it was King James who told the pilgrims when he was addressing Puritans at the Hampton Court Conference of 1604, I will make them conform themselves, or else I will harry them out of the land, or else do worse. And that's exactly what happened. What's our excuse today for not standing up for religious liberty and free speech when the consequences of doing so are so much less than they were for the pilgrims in the 17th century or other parts of the world still today? We need more people who are willing to stand up and speak out for truth and defend religious freedom. That's what we're working towards every day at Nebraska Family Alliance, and we hope that you will join us. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director at Nebraska Family Alliance, wishing everyone a very happy Thanksgiving. We hope that you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.